Joe Beaver Show is on the air. For years, there were forebodings, but did the powers that be pay enough attention? We're on the eve of destruction. And then it happened, gradually and suddenly.
We finally really did it. You maniacs! You blew it up!
The why and the wherefore of the destruction continues to be well documented, but the more pressing question now, of course, is... The answer to that existential question is not fully known, but what is known is that Beaver Nation carries on, speaking as one through it all.
Been in trouble, but I'm okay. Been through the ringer, but I'm okay.
We're strong enough to take it. We can make it.
And we have made it, at least one more time, to another edition of the Joe Beaver Show. On 1240 Joe Radio, KEJOAM.com, and 93.7 FM.
The board is set. Good morning, everybody. Welcome into the Joe Beaver Show. And what has been a busy and fun week, a really enjoyable week. It ain't over yet. We've got the next couple of hours to, we hope, glean a few more memories about Gil. And in fact, I had an experience last night with a good friend, a dear friend, and my broadcast partner from football and in baseball. He'll be joining the show later. Big Jim Wilson called to just kind of, a couple of questions, some administrative and logistical in nature, others just, what are you hearing? What's going on with football? What are you hearing? And he inquired, how have your shows been going? What are fans talking about? Well, we've done a lot on Gil. I said, oh! And he, I felt like he was getting his turntable going and queuing up, getting Ann Murray prepared in the background. The big hit from Ann Murray, Hey, 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 What About Me? Which she sang in the, early 80s. I liked the song, but Hey, 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 What About Me? And Jimmy Wilson, a little bit like Doug Oxen, and saying, I got a helmet, said Jack, an easy rider. He said, no, I love Gil. Hey, and I said, well, Jimmy, I'd love to have you on the show. Can you come on tomorrow? Let's do it. So Jim Wilson today at 11:45 showing by his standards, because he is the becalmed one among us. He's the one who very rationally, logically, reasonably
always
lays things out.
We're all freaking out.
Pounding the glass or falling back in my chair at Goss. He's just, he's got things well under control. But his level of enthusiasm about the Gil subject
surprised you?
It surprised me a little bit, but it also just immediately, we love talking to Big Jim Wilson anytime, any place, anywhere about anything.
Mm-hmm.
But his tight window with his work schedule at Fort Vancouver High School allows him to join us, and he will at about 11:45, and we'll have about 15 minutes, but He said, I love that place, and I grew up there. I grew up in Gil my whole life, and I love it, and so let's talk about it.
I predict his memories will have to do with breaking in.
Well, we'll see. I don't know what he's going to regale us with, but he'll join us at 11:45 as we've had a fun week of revisiting for many of you, and we appreciate you taking the time. It's opened a vein a little bit, it feels like, even maybe a little bit more than I would have expected, but it's been fun to visit with many of you and to read your texts, and we hope to get a few more today, because it has been a place that's been around for 75 years, and thus many of us have had many experiences in there.
Yeah, and mine go back to 78 and 79, going to basketball camp. Someone sent us a framed program, I think is what this is, and it's from way, way back when, and it says at the top, Golden Jubilee of Basketball at Oregon State, 1901 to 1951, And then there's a photograph of, is it Langton Hall?
Yes, the men's gym.
The men's gym. And it says, from this, and an arrow, it swoops around and it points to a photograph of a brand new Gill Coliseum to this in 1951. It's wrong date, but that's okay. And then below that, the banner reads, Washington versus Oregon State, January 12th through the 13th, 1951, souvenir program, 25 cents. So the whole thing is cool, and we're looking at it, and okay, that's neat. But as I'm looking at it a little bit deeper and then going back to some of the archival footage that Kip shared with us, it looks like it was painted white. And back then, when you look at old photographs, pretty much anywhere, your old home photographs or whatever, foliage hadn't grown yet. It's like, well, what happened from the 50 years before the photograph? Because I look at photographs of my house and my street, you know, where I grew up, and it's like, why is it overgrown? Why wasn't it overgrown in 1970 when we moved there? But anyway, there's nothing around the Coliseum as far as trees and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And now there's beautiful, you know, cordoned off tree, oak trees, and it's just beautiful. But there's nothing around it, and it's painted white. It's brand new. It's clean. And it's like, back then, that would have been a visual gem. It still is, but really, it really jumps out off of this souvenir program where it's painted white. Yeah. There's nothing around it, and it's just, look at this. And with, of course, at the time, the reputation that it was the best on the West, absolutely, you can see that when you see the photograph.
Thank you for sending that amongst the many texts that you've taken, been kind enough to take the time to send us and the calls. We'll have some of that coming up. In fact, an open hour in the noon hour. Big Jim Wilson, as I mentioned, at 11:45. At 11:20, Kyle Bjornstad, the head of the Damnation Collective, will get an update from him. He's slammed, he says, but he wants to get the good word out and even tease a big-time promotional event for the collective that I hope generates a good deal of response and enthusiasm from Beaver Nation with respect to what it could mean just in terms of helping the collective continue to do its great work. So Kyle Bjornstad at 11:20.
You want to know what I saw on Twitter at 4 o'clock this morning when I got up?
Yes.
I didn't save it. So I have to do this by memory. And well, my memory is terrible.
No, it's not. But give me a quick sense of what you saw.
Someone had sent a chart, and I don't know if it was from a publication, but it looked like it was professionally done and presented. It was a chart of all the NIL collectives for all the schools. Actually,
what their budget is and how much money they have in it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that would be something interesting. Did they give a figure for Oregon State?
No. It was just the top.
Oh, the top 20?
Probably, because they weren't numbered, but I think it was only about 20 schools. One thing that I was a little bit surprised on was that Virginia was amongst the schools, and most of the schools they're all blue bloods. Alabama, Penn State, Tennessee, Ohio State.
Right. And what was the range?
I think if my memory serves.
Sorry to turn my question into a Doug question.
No, that's okay. 40 million on the top.
40?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Down to, I want to say 9 million for...
In the top 20?
Yeah.
Kind of?
It might have been more than 20, 25, but it was 40 million down to 9 million, and 9 million, I remember this distinctly. Washington was the last one on the list.
Oh, at 9?
At 9 million.
I find that...
And then everything in between. Now, 40 million then dropped down to 36 million.
Do you know who
million.
Had the 40? Texas?
I think it was Texas, yeah.
Mm, sounds about right.
Yes, and I'm... 80% sure it was Texas.
Okay.
And I thought, well, this is interesting. It wasn't long enough to scroll down to see every school.
And you're not even sure that site was purporting to give every school's collective?
No, and I don't even know where it came from. Okay. I don't know. The tweeter, I should have looked.
That's all right.
But it's like,
you're
I'll get back
to
this. You're
waking up at 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
And... as we so often do in our world, I'll read it later, and then later comes
it's gone.
And A, it's gone, and B, you don't have time anymore.
Right.
But at 4 in the morning, you're getting up to begin your busy day, and so you don't have time to digest it all then either.
Right, but it was a comprehensive list, at least, that ranges from 40 down to 9.
In the top, what you felt like was kind of a top 20.
Yeah, and Oregon was way down the list.
Like around, 20-something?
No, even less than that.
Less? They listed less?
Yeah.
Okay.
There was a ton of schools ahead of Oregon.
Okay.
Now, I don't know what the parameters are. I don't know if that includes certain donors. I don't know what that means other than one has to think it just means that's what their collective has. So is Phil Knight's money not in the collective? Maybe it's a technicality.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I just know there's a pretty good deal of it.
Yeah. And it's the regulars. It's the ones you would
but
think.
But the powers, the blue bloods were all, it's there. Yeah. But Virginia, you felt, was a bit of an outlier
up
there.
I thought so.
Because their program doesn't seem to be commensurate with that kind of commitment. But maybe it's going to get there now.
And I know that they're a normal, good, big program. But they're not. You don't think of Virginia in football or any total sports package when you're thinking of Kentucky, even for basketball.
Right.
But you're thinking of, again, Ohio State, Alabama, Texas.
Did you see North Carolina in that top
10? I don't remember seeing North
Carolina.
It might
be there next week.
Well, yeah. Everyone's excited about that.
I know. Hey, so Kyle Bjornstad coming up in just a couple of minutes. Big Jim Wilson at 11:45, and then open phones, and we hope to get more of your memories and thoughts about Gil or any of these other matters, things that Kyle touches on. Sarah Elcano will join us on Tuesday. We've got her locked and confirmed, and we hope Mary Murphy on Monday, who will be calling the next three Beaver basketball games, two men's games. She'll have the next one the next night against Sac State on the 17th, but she will call both UC Irvine's on the men's and women's side this weekend. So I'm planning on confirming with Mary, her joining us Monday to give her impressions on the men and the women. This is a big game for the men tomorrow at 2.
Mm-hmm.
And here are the quick details before we break and come back with Kyle. Halftime will be the ceremonial aspects with a video tribute, some former players taking the floor and being introduced. It's not huge on the ceremonial side because there's an alumni game coming in February where alums from all eras are coming in, and it kind of coincides with the 75th year of Gil. So this Saturday, not huge on that, but the first 1,000 fans will get a really cool-looking, and I've seen them, commemorative ticket honoring the 75th anniversary of Gil Coliseum. Kyle Bjornstad has played in Gil. And he joins us next to talk about life in the collective and some good news on that front next on The Joe Beaver Show. We continue on The Joe Beaver Show. Mike Parker, John Warren, Big Jim Wilson coming up, a guy that knows and loves Gil Coliseum, knows and loves Beaver Nation, the 75th anniversary of Gil being celebrated this weekend, alumni night later in February. So there's a lot. And beyond that, a lot to really like about this year's basketball team. And that's sort of where I want to start, lest we get completely lost in the all-important work that Kyle Bjornstad and the Damnation Collective are up to. But, Kyle, I think you like what Wayne Tinkle and what his team and staff and players are up to here in the early going. It's been a fun team to watch, huh?
It has been fun, Mike. Thanks for having me, guys. No, it's been really fun to watch that team come together. I've gone to a few practices early and throughout the preseason, and boy, you look at that roster and there's a ton of talent on there. And the one question I had was, you know, how quickly can they come together, whether it be on the defensive end, sharing the ball, all of those things. And, you know, they've come together quick, and I think that they still have some things to clean up. But I tell you what, I would not want to play Oregon State basketball this season.
Yeah, hey, and the other thing too, Kyle, with respect to the work you do, without getting too deep into the week, but I think it's fair to say, I think Coach Tinkle himself has confirmed it with me, that I mean, this is all a collaborative effort, and the kind of roster that the Beavers have that they're able to roll out there, that there is some impact from the world you're in with respect to that and other rosters on our campus. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's accurate. You know, Mike, I always kind of deflect and defer. I think it obviously starts with the coaches. I think it's, you know, the culture within the locker room, mm-hmm. and it really starts building there. But yeah, this day and age, I'm more than happy to be able to, you know, step in and help from an NIL perspective, because, you know, it's here. It's something that you need to be really on top of. And so, yeah, playing a role in kind of helping build this team out and making sure that we've got resources to help in that sense. But I tell you what, it's the coaches, it's the culture that they've built, and that's what you're seeing on the floor. Because I will say, too, you can do a bunch of NIL, and I think we've seen it at other places, but until you get the right kids in the locker room who are willing to buy into the coach's philosophy and play together, NIL doesn't matter if you don't have those other things. So So no, happy to help and very proud of what we've been able to do for that program and others.
Mm-hmm.
But I always deflect and give all the kudos to coach and the staff.
Yeah, they're doing a tremendous job. It's been a fun team to watch. 2 o'clock tomorrow, we'll have it here on Joe Radio. Now, with respect to doing and being slammed, I mentioned yesterday, John and I said, if Kyle's not available today, that would also be good news. You're making time for us, but you've been slammed. You've been busy. What can you give us a sense, and Beaver Nation listening, a sense of what you're up to now, what your world entails since the end of the season and the portal opening? I mean, just what's happening in your world?
Yeah, it's, you know, everybody has their eyes on NIL and the transfer portal, you know, leading up to when a transfer portal opens. That's when a lot of people are talking, right? But the transfer portal, the way that I set up Damn Nation, is really kind of, it's a reflection of the work you put in throughout the year. You know, it's for us, you know, Oregon State is a place. It's the connection, it's the relationship, whether that's with donors or business partners or, in this case, student athletes. Like, we work really, really hard to get to know these kids. What are they interested in? What are they not interested in? Building out trust, all of those things that are really, really important in a relationship. And so our primary focus is always, you know, how do we take care of our current kids? How do we retain them? Because we're not naive to the fact that transfer portals are a real thing and some, you know, big dollars you hear about get thrown around out there, and it can be enticing. And so we really try to take care of our kids year round. So when the portal does come, they know that, hey, what I have at Oregon State is a really, really good thing. We trust Damn Nation and what they say they're going to do, they deliver on, which again, we're, you know, 2.5 years in now and we're batting 1,000%. And so what the work has been specifically over the past few weeks is just kind of, when the season is over, sit down with them, talk to them, ask them questions. Hey, where can we get better? How can we help you in this next year? Here's what this next year looks like for you. You know, all just reconfirming all of those things with them. And that plays into the vital role we play in the retention of our players. Again, though, I coach Bray and his staff, the culture is phenomenal. The kids came here and stay here for a reason. And I always lead with that, but we certainly play our role in that. And we've had some really, really good success. I think Beaver Nation sees the success we're having with the retention of our roster for the most part. And now as we kind of clean up those things and make sure we're good there, I also have to have my eye on what else is going on. And I've been very vocal about, I want to be a big player in bringing more talent to Corvallis and building out this roster and winning a bunch of games. So it's kind of never ending this time of year, but that's kind of what's going on right now.
Kyle Bjornstad joining us. Kyle, it's interesting because you've heard, you hear it, we all hear it, that Beaver Nation has respected, our fans have respected the idea, and you just touched on it at the end there, that we've sort of hung our hats on built, not bought. But then there have been people saying, hey, you guys got to get into the world. You got to change that slogan a little bit or modify it and be willing, not necessarily, quote unquote, to buy. But it sounds like you're saying, hey, we're not going to be passive here and only find developmental guys that we build up. It sounds like you're taking a big swing in this space, which could include having a budget that allows you to find the right fits through the portal that may cost a little bit, but you're willing to be in that world and you're able to, it sounds like, these days.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, I keep a pretty low profile. I don't, you know, talk a lot, but if we're not willing to do that, what are we doing? You know, we want to be the best that we can be. We want Oregon State to be the best that it can be. And what does that mean? I want to be competing year in and year out for conference championships. And if you're doing that, then you're going to be in the postseason and you are in the conversation to do some really special things. That's just always been my philosophy. And so while I've been quiet, we've been working really, really hard to put ourselves in a situation to, again, retain our players. If we didn't have what we have, we wouldn't be able to do that. So hopefully that is one thing that people can look at and say, oh, they're doing a pretty good job. And then secondly, like you said, it starts with the fit. It starts with making sure, you know, does the kid like Corvallis? Does the kid like the coaching staff? All of those things, that the boxes that have needed to be checked forever, those are still top, on my mind, the top boxes that need to be checked. And then if NIL is part of a conversation, that's where I can kind of step in and say, hey, what do we do to make this work? And then I just need to be very mindful of the resources I have and making sure that I'm not making promises that, I don't think we can, you know, fulfill. And I just won't ever do that. So yeah, swing for the fences. That's my philosophy. Let's do every single thing that we can do to make Oregon State as good as we know it is and want it to be.
Kyle, reiterate if you would, and I know you did the last time we had you on, the relationship between Coach Bray and you, and who decides how much to give someone, how hard to go after them, and when to let go. It can't be that it's completely separate. It has to be incongruent with each other, because you don't know if he wants to keep a guy versus, oh my gosh, just do whatever you can. We got to keep this guy. So how does that whole thing work?
Yeah, so that's a really interesting dynamic, and I think that's one thing that I have a little bit of a leg up on in terms of maybe some other collectives or other schools, is just my connection with the school, right? You know, having been a student athlete, having been an administrator, I know our coaches really well from kind of my former life of working at Oregon State. So all that trust and all of that is there. When it comes to the NIL, so to answer your question, obviously I know Coach well. I do talk to him. I mean, I've known him for quite some time, so there's that. Look, I do respect, though, how a program should be built, and that is the coaches decide, you know, what players are on the roster and all of those types of things. If they're a Beaver and they're on the roster, obviously I want to help them. I want to work with them. What my job is, again, to focus on what resources do I have and look kind of at the quote market out there. What can we do with the resources based on who's on the roster? You know, where are they in terms of locker room? Are they a younger guy? Are they an older guy? How much do you know, eyeballs on them? How much are they playing? Because you have to keep in mind too, how I've built this out. We're not just asking one, two, three donors to fund this thing. We're actively working with business partners. We always need more, but working with business partners to identify marketing opportunities. And so that takes a lot of pressure off too, because if a business comes to me and says, hey, I want to use the marketing dollars and I want these five student athletes to promote my business or product or service or whatever it is, then obviously we can link them that way. And there's really the decision being made is led by a business putting their money in. That's their right. So, but again, my philosophy, I get this question all the time. Coaches are allowed to connect student athletes or parents of student athletes or whoever to the collective. They're allowed to educate on how it all works, but there is an official handoff there, because coaches should not be dictating dollar amounts or promising dollar amounts or anything like that. And so my thought is, if my phone rings and it's from a student athlete or a parent of a student athlete or a prospective student athlete, and they got my number from a coach, then that's probably likely somebody that the coach might like me to work with, because they aren't getting my number elsewhere, if that makes sense. So we do things by the book. We know what we can do and what we can't do and what coaches can do and what they can't do. We do not make those waters murky. And that's kind of how those handoffs go. There's an NIL conversation to be had. They hand it off to me and I run it from there.
Kyle Bjornstad, the head of the Damnation Collective, joining us. Kyle, I heard an interview with a player from down the road on the Dan Patrick radio show this morning. It had a video component, and Patrick made some mention of, oh, is that a Nil jacket you're wearing? And it was Dylan Gabriel. And yeah, he said, yeah, it is. And, you know, Phil's great to us. I mean, he just blatantly, Phil's great. It's a Nike jacket, et cetera, et cetera. And I just, yeah. I heard that and thought, okay. I mean, is there an element in your world, Kyle, where I mean, I know they're on a big stage right now, but where fans and people where you want sort of players to be showcased and asked about and be able to say freely, yeah, at Oregon State, I'm getting X, Y, and Z. I mean, is there a place in our world like that?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, I again, I kind of go back to the culture, and that's just not what we're about.
Right.
It's not, you know, the flash and all that stuff. I think the most flattering part of what I do is when, you know, you kind of hear through organic conversations that student athletes that we work with are, you know, as recruits come in on visits or they're talking to, just the general public or fans, like, hey, yeah, I am really well taken care of. I don't ever have to worry about anything. Everything they say they're going to do, they're going to do. Just that quiet credibility I like to talk about. We're doing our job. The guys are happy. If we weren't, you would hear a ton about it. Mm-hmm. That's the fact of matter. The fact that you don't hear much about it, to me, is the biggest pat on the back you could actually get, because we're just going about our business as the kids are. Like, go to school, play your sport, have a great college, you know, collegiate experience. Just do that. And, you know, some of that flash stuff, it's, you know, maybe there's a place for it, but that's never been what we're about, you know? So, that's how I would answer that question. It's kind of, you know, I have my philosophy on that. I like the more the quiet approach.
Yes.
And just organically get out there that, hey, they're getting their job done and the kids are having a good time and we're winning and all those things. That's the flash I want. It's do our role quietly and let the rest take care of itself.
I respect that immensely, Kyle. I just, you know, and I'm thinking in terms of, you know, fan base and Beaver Nation who have said, as we sort of struck out on earlier, the built, not bought. Haven't you heard that conversation where some of our own fans and our own people are saying, yeah, that's cool, that's great, but we may need to be buyers sometime and we can't shy away from that. It sounds like in your world, quietly, organically, yeah, you're going to buy when necessary or when available and when it's right, but in terms of flashing that around, not necessarily.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And, you know, the word I like to stay away from is, you know, we're not buying anything. The way I like to talk about it is we're investing in things. Mm-hmm. We're investing in this culture. We're investing in these programs. We're investing in young men and women, giving them opportunities to grow themselves while we continue to, you know, hit our big goals, winning games and ultimately championships. So absolutely. And point, Mike, I think how we go about that, it really is on the philosophy on building. We can do some great things together if we build this together. And again, it's not 2, 3, 4 people, you know, chipping in to make sure this works. This is Beaver Nation as a whole doing. I ask, and I'm not shy in asking, I ask everybody in Beaver Nation to get involved in at the level they can. Mm-hmm. Is that $10 a month? Is it $500 a month? Mm-hmm. Or do you own a business and want to do, you know, a few $1,000s in marketing? You know, that's the building I'm talking about, is getting everybody all in, feeling mm-hmm. ownership, and then we can do some really, really, really good things and invest in a lot of different kids while we watch our Beavers succeed.
Kyle, you have a great attitude about this and doing right, doing things the right way and all of that. However, we all know that not everything is Pollyanna and that there's those who are going to come to you with an attitude, whether it be their parent, their agent, or they themselves, and say, what are you going to do for me? How do you handle that when it comes along? Because that would get very tiresome.
You know, it is tiresome, but to be honest, I have a little bit of fun in this space too. Like, there are, and honestly, not with our current kids. I always believe, again, Oregon State is a special place and it attracts special people who are here for, again, the right reasons: culture, community, coaches, teammates, all of that. NIL, in my opinion, is a value add. It's not the thing, but it's definitely something where we can step up and add value. It is funny, though, in this space, you know, you have agents reaching out constantly. I hate saying it, but they're shopping kids around.
Right.
They're just trying to get the best deal for the kids so they get the best deal for themselves. That is a very real thing. And again, one reason that I rely on the coaches, they build their rosters. And if I'm going to talk to a kid that they would like me to talk to, that's how I handle it. But I've had some fun in this space. Agents will call and shop around a kid, and I shoot them very, very straight. And I see exactly kind of what they're doing and why, and they're trying to leverage different offers from different places and just shop a kid around for the top dollar. But I also know where this system is really messed up is there's a lot of offers out there on a national level that are just schools or collectives have no intention of actually fulfilling those dollar amounts. They just don't.
Wow.
And so what I tried to do is educate, and why I like to work directly with the athletes as much as I can, is to educate them. They need to be careful. They need to be careful. At least here they know that what we tell them we're going to do, we're going to do, and we're going to honor it. But there are, I'm not going to get into specific names, but you can watch, you know, some kids that may have left here and gone elsewhere, maybe didn't have the experiences that they thought they were going to have or were told they were going to have, and it didn't turn out great. So, again, I'm most proud of the work done, and we're going to keep building on that and keep working and take care of these kids. And that's what it's all about.
Last few more minutes with Kyle Bjornstad, taking time out of a slammed schedule and the important work that he's doing. We'll touch on everybody doing their part here in a moment. You're going to roll something out that I think is really exciting. It's also challenging. We'll get to that in closing, Kyle, in a moment. But you just indirectly alluded to maybe a year ago at this time, we were experiencing the exodus and people leaving and the coaching staff leaving and players leaving. And maybe in some cases it didn't quite work out as well as maybe they thought it might, as you alluded to. However, compared to where we are maybe, Kyle, now, where we were a year ago about at this time in your world with the rebuilt Pac-12 and the stability that comes with that, the recruiting class that just came in, what you're sensing about the direction of things now compared to the uncertain world we were really in 1 year ago?
Yeah, well, luckily I could answer this question and it's kind of verified what I was hoping would happen. As you know, go back a year ago, that was a really tough situation. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Pac-12, you know, everybody knows what happens with the Pac-12. And then on top of that, you have a head coach leave, right? And just when you have a head coach leave, you could see a mass exodus of a program. But on top of that, you know, the conference falling apart, the uncertainty of what this was going to look like. I've said this multiple times, and I believe it wholeheartedly, or I wouldn't say it. You know, for a small amount of time, while I didn't agree with some of the kids leaving, I kind of, if you put yourself in the shoes of an 18 to 22 year old, you kind of understood, right? Mm-hmm. Your head coach left, the Pac-12 this, Pac-12 that. What does this look like? You know, some of them left because there's just some of that uncertainty. Fast forward a year. Well, let me go back. I said then, and it's, you're starting to see it now, you almost have to give last year a little bit of a flyer because some of those kids, what they came to Corvallis for, it changed. It was a little bit different. There was some uncertainty, but now all the kids that stayed through that last year and all the kids we're recruiting in now, they know what the situation is. There are no surprises. The recipe for our success is still the same. What you're seeing now is the retention's very high. The kids know the situation they're in. They love it. We're able to take care of them. They're staying for the most part, and we're going to keep building this out. Last year was an anomaly. I just wanted to make sure to go through this process to make sure the thought of it being an anomaly was true, and we're seeing that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's how I try to explain it as best I can. It just, you know, it was a blip in the radar. Nobody could control that.
No.
Conference, head coach, and now here we are back stable again, and you're seeing we've got the right kids, and they want to be here, and they want to fight this thing through. So that's how I would answer that.
Yeah, and Kyle, final thing, and I touched on it. What is happening? You've talked about $10 a month, and you appreciate that. Anybody, subscribers, numbers could play a big role. Just the number of people that are not so much subscribers, members of the Damnation Collective. Tell us what you're not officially released yet, but could you give us a little sense of where you're going, maybe even later today, soon, an official announcement about what the collective in a bold move is doing to continue to be really competitive and exciting times in your world? What's going on?
Yeah, great question. Thank you. So the collective's resources are really come out of three buckets. There's corporate sponsorships, you know, small, medium, regional businesses that are using marketing dollars to promote through student athletes. Then you've got other things like merchandise partnerships, things that you can sell that people can buy and enjoy, and proceeds of that can go to our cause as well. But and then there's obviously larger gifts from donors who are able and want to assist in this arena. The other bucket, and I think the most important bucket, as I've said many times, I want to build out a sustainable collective that's going to continuously have resources to help these athletes. That final bucket is just the general public, the Beaver fans. And what we're asking, last year we had an anonymous supporter who did $1 million match. They'd match every dollar into the collective, dollar for dollar, for $1 million. And we succeeded with that through the masses. This year we have a challenge. It's a little bit different. There's $1 million challenge out there that we're going to be rolling out. But the goal is to get 2,500 reoccurring monthly members. So sign up for a membership. They start as little as $10 a month, and they incrementally go up. There's a membership. Our highest tier is $500 a month. You get benefits according on your level. But if we can hit 2,500 members in Beaver Nation giving a minimum $10 a month on their credit card and being a member, we have an anonymous donor who will put $1 million to the fund. So again, it's a goal. It's a lofty goal. It's not going to be easy. We're going to have to promote it, and people are going to need to share it and do their part to help us out. But that's a challenge we're going to be putting out there almost immediately. And I look forward to seeing Beaver Nation respond. And by the way, you can support the general fund, what we're doing, or you can specifically support the program that you want. Mm-hmm. You get to pick where the dollars go, support, you know, volleyball, wrestling, mm-hmm. football, whatever you want. That's where the dollars are going to go. And we're going to roll that out and continue building out a sustainable collective.
So we can look for an official announcement along those lines soon. We appreciate, Kyle, you teasing it a little bit and touching on it. Thank you for making time for us. Let's stay in touch in the days ahead, maybe after the holidays, reconvene in early January and kind of see where we all are in this process. But let's just close again with the note. I'm right, am I not? And is Beaver Nation right to read what's been happening here in these early days, these last few weeks since the end of the season? Good stuff, good things. I mean, the Beavs are moving forward in a pretty good place, it feels like.
Yeah, 1,000%. No, you know, nobody's immune to the transfer portal. You know, players are going to come and go, mm-hmm. and no program's immune from that. But I think you're seeing with the retention we're having, kids coming out and announcing they're coming back, we're very excited and happy about the position we're in. And, you know, you're not going to win every battle, but we want to win the majority and most of them, and I feel great about that. And then the next piece is, let's bring some additional talent to Corvallis, pack out Reefer and our other venues, and just win a bunch of games and have fun doing it.
Kyle, thanks for the time and making time for us. We'll be in touch. Thanks for joining the show.
Thanks, Kyle.
Thanks, guys.
Kyle Bjornstad, our guest. Big Jim Wilson next on Gill, and then an hour of open phones on the Joe Beaver Show. We just spoke with Kyle Bjornstad at some length about the Damnation Collective. Things are going well in terms of retention, but he also made it clear the Beavers are going to be players where they can be when in the market, so to speak, the free agent market, when the fit is right. And the price, I think what he's saying, they're going to be willing spenders and buyers in the market when the price is right and the fit is right and all of that. Now, before we get to Big Jim Wilson's memories of Gill, which is what we've been talking about all week, Jim, what are as you read Beaver football since the season ended, retention of players, announcing they're coming back, where Kyle, you hope he might and perhaps look to spend some portal, some nil dollars. I mean, what do you make of kind of what you're seeing right now and what you kind of hope to see in the next few weeks?
Well, Micah, it's certainly been encouraging that the outflow of guys has been quite low. Mm-hmm. And so that tells me that about what Kyle just got through talking about is that, you know, the Beavers must be doing something to keep these guys on campus. So, I mean, I think that part of it is that's the first part. And then the next part is getting out there and bringing some guys in. And that's obviously ongoing. But when you ask me what I hope to they signed some guys. It's not just quarterback; it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
There's guys that we the Beavers need, and it's not just frontline guys. It's depth. It's everything.
So, what? Yeah.
That's what I hope. I hope to just hear about some guys that are on their way to Corvallis to help this football team.
And Jim, when you say not just quarterback, it's almost a given for that. But what are the other, if you had to prioritize and say, okay, you got money and you can spend it here, there, and where? What are the biggest needs in your view, and like to, if there are some nil dollars available to go to?
I think you got to be good up front. And I would say tackles on offense. Offensive linemen, mm-hmm. but mostly tackles because you lost them both. And Van Wells, obviously, centers and tackles is generally my battle
mm-hmm.
cry.
Mm-hmm.
But with Van Wells coming back, and I think you have a center, and there's guys that have snapped the ball. Obviously, Luka Vincic is not going to be part of that rotation. Maybe that's why, because he wanted to be a center.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where I'd start, a tight end, a dynamic tight end. You can always use another runner and receiver if there's a guy who is, even though I thought Darius Clemens, the way he finished, Trent Walker coming back, I mean, I feel better about that room moving into mm-hmm. next year, but you can all, if there's an electric guy. And then defense, really across the board. I mean, there's not a position. I'd love to get an edge guy that gets to the quarterback and some more impactful interior D linemen, linebackers. I think depth is an issue at that position. And you just lost Andre Jordan Jr. So, I mean, across the board, Mike, on defense.
Hey, Jimmy, you and I were talking about other matters last night, and I said, Gil, we've been talking about Gil, and you kind of almost like, hey, I love Gil. Let's talk about it. So we've only got a few minutes left, but when I brought up the subject, the topic of 75 years of Gil, that resonated with you. Why? How? Tell us about your Gil story or stories, so to speak.
Well, the answer to your question is I grew up in Corvallis, Oregon, and Gil Coliseum was basically our heaven. We spent weekends there, summers there. We played, we'd play all day long on the weekends. We'd go in Gil Coliseum. We'd play in Parker Stadium. Then, of course, growing up watching the games, Paul Valeni was my first coach that I remember coaching basketball for Eddie Boyd. But mostly the Ralph Miller teams. And forget about the Beavers. I'll talk about some of the, not forget about, mm-hmm. but they were given. But here's Lou Alcindor, Pete Maravich. Right. Sidney Wicks, Paul Westfall, Gail Goodrich, John Wooden, George Raveling. Mm-hmm. And, that's just basketball. I mean, that Jeff Lewis, and I watched him at halftime of a basketball game wrestle, but I obviously saw him wrestle as well. Dale Thomas was just a classic. I watched the best fight I've ever seen in a basketball game between the Beavers had an NFL defensive lineman that he played basketball for. Well, he didn't even play in this game because he got in a fight. They put him in with 10 seconds or so left in the game, and he got in a fight before the clock even started with the guy from Seattle U. Wilkinson was 6'9", 285, and the other guy looked like Muhammad Ali. He just was he was like 6'6", 250. And they fought. the Ricky Lee, they tripped the cheerleader. When I got to college, the Beavers were the number one team in the country, and in basketball. And so students were spending the night, sometimes for two nights outside, to get into those games.
Jimmy, did you see were you at the tripping of the cheerleader game? Do you have a vivid recollection
Absolutely.
Of Rick Cooten going sprawling out?
Yes.
Okay.
I was there.
And
I usually sat on the floor. I mean, just because they got me in. I was very fortunate to have friends that would give me tickets, and I was good friends with the Eggers family. And of course, John Eggers was the sports information director. So I found my way into a lot of these games just great memories of all of it, basketball, you know, Harlem Globetrotters wrestling. I mean, it's just, it was a part of our life growing up as a Corvallis kid.
Jim, did you know, and you and your friends and people around, when Harder tripped Rick brandishing the Chancellor's Trophy, did you know what had happened? I mean, I'm surprised that Dick and Oregon got away. As I know it got kind of maybe nasty and loud, but what do you remember about the aftermath of that, the buzz around the building? What happened?
We knew it was a duck. Everybody was saying Mark Barwick, but it came out later. I don't think it came out as people left the arena that night that it was Harder, but Rick was a male cheerleader, and he ranced right in front of he was literally in front of their bench. He was running along the sideline, and he got tripped up. And no, there's just so many. I love that place. It's just electric when it's going. But what it just, like I mentioned, those people, those players. Pete Maravich was 30-for-31 at the free throw line. And his dad, Press, was the coach. And, I mean, George Raveling dunked in warm-ups. Yeah. He was the coach for Washington State.
Yeah.
And he suited down and dunked in warm-ups.
That's cool.
Just my memories, I could almost go on forever.
Yeah, I bet you could.
Did you have any childhood memories of breaking in so you guys could play?
Oh, we always did. Every weekend, I mean, that's what we did. I actually played a couple of high school games there because – I mean, I was so fortunate. I went to Crescent Valley, but we only played in Gill when we reached the sort of the league format playoffs. So, you know, one, I think, is in, two plays, five, three plays, four. So those games are in Gill. And so I did that for a couple of years. It was so cool. And one year we ended up playing Corvallis in the finals of that. And there was, you know, probably like 4,000 people there. It was something, and as a high school player, it's not Gill, but we played our home games at Parker Stadium.
Yeah.
So I mean, just what a great place to grow up, and the university and Gill Coliseum itself was just such a major part of it.
Well, Jim, when I was blessed and fortunate enough to get this job back in '99, you told me. Came by the house and said, "You're going to the best town in America to grow up in, to raise, you know, and because you experienced it. That's coming from your heart. You love the place. You love Gill. You love the university. We love you and appreciate you, Jim. Thanks for making time in your busy schedule for us. Hope to see you at Gill soon for a basketball game."
Yeah, go get them tomorrow, Mike.
Yeah, it's a big one. Thanks, Jim. Big Jim Wilson. It is a big one tomorrow. 2:00. Again, the first 1,000 fans, a commemorative ticket. For the 75 anniversary, first 1,000 get a commemorative ticket. Some alums will be introduced. There'll be a video tribute at halftime. That's tomorrow. We'll be on the air at 1:30. Then the women's basketball team Sunday at 1. Ron Callen will have the call at 12:30. We've got an hour of open phones. Love to get your calls and texts and kind of bring the week to a culmination. It's been a really enjoyable week. Big Jim Wilson loves the place. It comes from the heart. Still would like to know any of you who might have known, it was Harder and you had to hold yourself back from a full-blown riot.
Denise, would you kindly clear the wheels?
Okay, here we go. On three. One, two.
Tweets and texts, faces and books. Tweets and texts and faces and books.
Seems like it's more about FM and color TV.
In such an age as this, is there any room left for something as simple as
radio?
We believe there is.
Touchdown, Beaver!
Joe Beaver Show is on the air with Mike Parker and John Warren, two men on a mission to prove
that AM radio is a viable and modern source for news and entertainment.
So gather the whole family.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
If you don't have one, fret not.
I'll have the management send you up a radio.
Be a part of the triumphant return of amplitude modulation.
This is the big one, boys. This is the one that brings us back. Soon, AM radio will reign king once more.
It's the Joe Beaver Show on the home of the Beavers.
Cool beats.
Kill me. 1240 Joe Radio.
I don't even remember the name of the movie
that came from.
I found it. I watched the movie with my kids many years ago, because that opens like from 2012, isn't it? Or 2011 or 12? That was 11.
That was 11.
That was 11.
Yeah.
Speedways. I don't know. It was some weird. I kind of liked it. It made me laugh. The movie was funny. A great actor, Ian McShane, very good actor, played in it. It's a sophomoric comedy.
Wow.
But funny.
Ian McShane in a sophomoric comedy?
Yes. Yes. I liked it. Sandberg. Yeah. Somebody Sandberg. CVB, or others will know, and please educate me and illuminate the name of that movie. But I remember while watching it, I almost got up and stopped. I said, oh, my goodness. Soon AM radio will be king once more. I don't know what this movie is. I don't know. I'm kind of laughing and enjoying it, but that's going to make a joke.
That line was
open.
In that movie?
Yeah.
And what was the reason in the movie to say, AM radio is going to be?
Well, there was some sort of jump this guy. I don't know. What's the name of that movie? Somebody, please, on the University Hounded Text line. What movie am I talking about? I liked it. It's like from 2010, 11, 12, thereabouts.
Andy Samberg?
Andy Samberg is the star of it. He's
Chris
one of the.
Chris Parnell, Annette.
What's the name of the movie?
Out of the Blue?
No.
No. That was something, never mind.
But anyway, it made me laugh, but I got up right then because this promotion, this guy. Hot Rod. There we go. Thank you.
I know of that movie. I never saw it, though.
It's good. I like it.
All right.
But in Hot Rod, that guy saying soon AM radio is going to be king once more was wanting to broadcast this Evel Knievel-like big hype jump. And we're going to put it on radio. It's going to be on AM radio. And so this is the big one, boys. This is going to bring us back.
Nice.
Okay, now.
That's funny.
Into the second hour we go. Open phones, texts. Doug came in when we were talking to Big Jim Wilson. This is one that hasn't gotten much play, and maybe before the show and week is over, maybe, just maybe, if Rick Cooten himself is available, he's regaled us with the tale. Bud Withers has talked about it. Others of you have talked about it. Doug Blair just walked in and said, I was there when Rick Cooten went sprawling with the Chancellor's Trophy in the 73-74 game at Gill. The Beavers were winning to win the Chancellor's Trophy, and Cooten's running around the floor with it, and Dick Carter trips him.
Did he get hurt?
He wasn't hurt. He went on with Daryl on the postgame show to talk about what had happened.
His 15 minutes of fame.
But he's still being written about. Eggers has written about it. Any of you, do you remember it? Do you remember? And what Doug came in, this was a piece that we've mentioned Jimmy Wilson and his brother John Wilson. My dear friend Bobby Wilson has also told me, maybe Jim and Kim, if you're listening, if you were both there, anybody who was actually there, Doug came in with this little detail that I find interesting because I don't think it can't be done quite like this anymore. But, and Kip, if you're listening, anybody who kind of remembers this dynamic, after the Harder tripping incident of Cooten, and Doug said, we didn't know. We just saw Cooten go sprawling.
Right, right.
Jim Wilson said they weren't quite sure. They knew it was a Duck personnel, somebody.
From the bench,
It tripped him. But because of the almost near riotous situation, like because it was clear somebody knocked him down, tripped him.
Yeah.
That's not good. That it got loud and ugly, and just before the game was over, Harder was meeting with the officials of the game and maybe even some Beaver officials, and they did not use their usual exit. Dougie said they went under the grandstands out into a side hall and down as opposed to the usual method
corner,
of exiting to stay away from the potential mob reaction. Do any of you remember that at all?
I'm sure the door that they went through behind the stands is still there, but the tunnel and the entryway to do that is not.
Yeah. So if you have any recollection on the detail on that, I think Bryce Huddleston has called us before on this. Bryce remembers it pretty well. If any of you remember it pretty well, that particular incident as one of the many in the incredible rivalry that Bud Withers wrote about in Mad Hoops, feel free to call or text.
If we're going to do that, I want to know the details of who and how did they get this bleeding duck up on the...
That's a good question,
hanging
too.
From the rafters.
That's a good question, too. So anything, let's get to some text, Johnny, as we wrap it up. And if anybody wants to augment or supplement what that particular infamous incident in the building, one of many, not anything quite like that, but Jim Wilson just talked about something I'd never heard of before, a player for the Beavers named Wilkinson getting into the fight that he ever saw with a player from Seattle U. It was like a heavyweight battle on the court at Gill, a real fight.
And the Beaver guy goes on to play in the NFL defensive line. The same person who told you Hot Rod was the movie said the AM radio station in the movie paid for the exclusive rights to The Jump. I don't know if that's true, if that's just a gag. Out of the blue question, Mike, you quote the and refer movies and books often. Can you give a list of your top five movies and books?
Not off the top of my head. That would require some work.
Be able to do the top five movies.
Yeah, books too, probably. But
what's your all-time favorite movie?
I can't do it. I really can't. That's, again, like, who's your all-time favorite child?
Oh, that's easy. That's whoever, whichever child I'm with.
Whoever you're
and
talking
I always
to
tell
them,
hey, now, listen, don't tell Maddie.
Don't tell Maddie.
You're my favorite.
my wife, Missy, is one of nine siblings, and she thought, you know, at one point, you know, rest her soul, but her mother said, you know, you really are my favorite. And then when Missy finally one day ran that by some of her sisters, mom said the same thing to me. So you're right. It depends on the moment. Be where your feet are. Okay.
Let me just ask you this.
Yeah.
Has it lasted for decades?
What, the movie long?
Your favorite movie, if you had one, because mine used to be Forrest Gump, greatest movie ever made.
Mm-hmm.
And I can waver on that now because I've seen more movies.
Yeah. No, you're right. But that's a thank you for the question. Can't do it. My favorite book ever might be The Descent of the Dove by Charles Williams. And I'll just leave it at that.
Never heard of it.
I know, but I love it and I read it constantly. Not that the poet Auden himself said, I've been reading and rereading The Descent of the Dove for 16 years and find it an inexhaustible source of insight and whatever. And that is probably my favorite book that I read and reread, The Descent of the Dove by Charles Williams. Anyhow, we have open phones and texts. I'll work up a list at some point.
Yeah, I want to know what it
is. But I can't do it now.
We have a Dave from Corvallis, and I think he's new.
Okay.
I could be wrong. But
I'd love to hear from any of you that were there.
Rick Hooten, someone writes in, got an apology letter from the coach.
Yeah, Dick wrote him a letter. Mm-hmm. Was compelled to. But I do think, even in the apology, and isn't this so true, even in the letter of apology to Kooten, Dick made sure he found a way, and there would be some that would agree with Coach Arter, that, you know, I felt that, you know, I was in a timeout with my players and felt that you, you know, were being a distraction to that. It still is no excuse for me to do what I did.
That's so a little Colonel Jessup.
Even in the apology. Did you do that? You're darn right I tripped him.
You can't.
You want me on that floor, and you need me on that floor. It was kind of the apology Harder gave to Rick Kooten, I think. Okay, Dave in Corvallis. Dave, good afternoon. Welcome to the Joe Beaver Show.
How you doing today, Mike?
Hey, okay, Dave, thank you.
Good. Hey, we've met, and I don't know if you know which Dave this is, but it's Dave that hosts Nice Players, and you and I met through Chase Gomez. And so I've been around for a while. Just
absolutely. Good to hear from you, Dave. Thank you.
Good. And I've been lucky enough to retire here, and I went to college here during the Orange Express time. So in my years of four years of Gill, I was lucky enough to only see four losses the entire time I was there.
Wow.
So it was a pretty good time.
That's a good run.
Basketball.
Yeah, you're spoiled.
Yes. Yeah.
And I was one of those crazy people that you read about that would spend a night or two on the ramp to get in. And so we were one of the first groups. The Wilson Zoo crew from the sixth floor of Wilson Hall was one of the first groups that started spending the night so we could have our permanent seats at Gill Coliseum. So that's kind of a crazy piece, but that's not what I wanted to share.
Okay.
The moment I wanted to share was in the 80-81 season when we were undefeated going into the last game against Arizona State, and we were undefeated, obviously, and 26-0, and we were getting our butts kicked. That Arizona State team was really, really good,
yes.
And so were we.
Yeah.
But Sparky, their mascot, was cruising around, and as the result of the game was pretty definite that we were going to lose, he pulled off his shirt, and he had a jersey an Oregon State jersey that said 26-1.
Mm.
At the time, we were 26-0, and he was claiming defeat. And obviously, the students were quite, and the fans were quite upset about it. And it got to quite a ruckus. Folks were throwing some things on the floor, a lot of booze during the timeout, and the whole bit. And it was getting pretty bad there towards the end of the game. And this was when the players were on the north side of the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Ralph, I can remember during a timeout, but it was getting pretty ruckus. Ralph Miller walked across the court and grabbed the microphone and scolded one specific student who was standing up to throw something, and he told him to sit his, excuse my language, ass down.
Mm-hmm.
They were getting their butts kicked bad enough on the court. We didn't need to embarrass ourselves anymore. And that stadium just silenced itself.
Wow.
It was the most impressive thing, most control of the stadium I've ever seen in my entire life, what Ralph did at that point.
I've not heard
that's
that
a great story
before.
Dave. I knew the only other time I knew Ralph had actually taken the microphone, he did so after the Rick Cooten tripping incident, too, saying because it was getting pretty unruly and raucous in there. And Ralph, because of the potential for even worse behavior, I've read that Ralph took the microphone and said something about, we all saw what happened, but that's no excuse for because there must have been stuff coming out of the stands or whatever else, too. So Ralph was not shy about taking control, and it sounds, Dave, as though you were impressed with, A, that Ralph took control of that volatile situation, but maybe even as impressed by the fans, okay, coach, and quieted down.
What? Once you could tell, once when Ralph speaks, people listen, and he was able to silence a 10,000 audience crowd down instantaneously. So I can imagine what he could have done in practices outside of smoking his cigarettes. You know, whenever he wanted to speak, people listened every time he did.
Well,
but probably an additional funny story, or I guess shows where you are because of who you are, what you've done. Is in that crew of the sixth floor Wilson Floor Zoo crew that spent a couple years spending nights and, you know, just so we could go watch Oregon State basketball, there was a roommate or a dorm mate on our sixth floor that he didn't quite join us because I guess he had other things to do. And his name was Jensen Huang, the CEO of NVIDIA.
Serious.
Oh, my gosh. You went to school with Jensen?
Yeah, Jensen Huang, the NVIDIA CEO, he was on our dorm floor, and he didn't join us in our escapades at Gill Coliseum of spending the nights and stuff. I think he probably had a few better things going on.
He may, But Dave, I'm gonna from here on in, I got to hold you responsible for not getting him over there, you know, for recruiting him into that world. Maybe things would be different.
Donor, it's my fault.
Yeah, he could be our sugar daddy and.
That is something. So were you friends? I mean, would you say you had a decent relationship with him in those days?
No. He just lived on the dorm floor. I cannot say we were friends, but I know, I've looked in, buddies of mine have contacted him to verify he was there. And then we've looked in yearbooks as well. And he was living on the dorm floor. He did not partake in all of our other college escapades as the rest of us did. And that's probably why he's where he's
that
at.
That could well be. Could you imagine young Jensen just saying, where's everybody going? Well, they're going over to sleep on the ramps at Gill Coliseum. Do you want to go?
And as focused as he has to be right now, he had to have thought, as many other people did, that we were completely crazed lunatics.
Oh, yeah.
He probably was right.
Yeah,
how things would have been different if we could have brought Jensen. Well, maybe NVIDIA might not have been there if we brought him with us.
That's
true.
You never know. You can't go, all these time travel movies you'd like to go, well, let's cajole Jensen into joining us and maybe he'll become a huge basketball fan. But then maybe NVIDIA doesn't. Maybe a lot of things don't happen.
Dave, I just have to say this is the best story I've heard all
week. Yeah, it's a great story. This is a great way to help us cap this week, Dave. It really is. Last thing on this. And we've talked off and on over the 20-some years we've been together on the show. But those camping nights entailed a couple of, right? You'd start on a Thursday. I mean, how did it all work? And did you take turns going to class and then come back to the spot you'd claimed on the ramp with your sleeping bags and tents? I mean, how elaborate and detailed did this all get, Dave?
Yes, on all of that. We did take turns so people could go to class. And the interesting story about that one, I can remember when I was a junior, I was a senior, I believe it was, and I had to take a speech class to finish my requirements or whatever. And one of the speeches, and I was a teacher, and so I'd been through my student teaching and everything, so speaking in public wasn't a difficult thing, but I still had to take the requirement to do it. And I went to my speech class, and we had a speech we had to do on a process speech. And so my speech I decided to do was on how to get the best seats for students at the Oregon State game. And so, as you know, when you're speaking, you want to get their attention, you want to draw their attention, you want to leave them with a bang. So my conclusion to my speech was, I told them about the process of, you know, you had to take turns because classes and work your way up and the whole way. And my conclusion of my speech was, oh, and by the way, it's my turn to stay on the ramp, so I'll see you guys later. I left the room, and they were waiting for me to come back in to criticize or give information input on the speech. I never came back till the next class because I had to go to the ramp.
That's a perfect way to exemplify exactly what you're talking about.
You should have got an A on that speech.
Yes, I did get an A on that one, and it definitely got their attention. And when I came back, I was talking to the instructor. And he said, yeah, we sat here and we waited for like 20 minutes and he never came back. And I said, well, yeah, because I was go call and see him. I couldn't come back.
Yeah. And so would you do a little cooking, like little stoves and take care of yourselves during the night?
We'd ordered a lot of pizza. Domino's at the time had just come into town.
Yeah.
And so we ordered a lot of Domino's pizza. If we were really feeling good and financial checks had just come in, we would get Woodstocks, but it was mainly Domino's and chips and soda. It wasn't much cooking. There wasn't any cooking that I can remember on the dorm floor. And then, of course, all of us lived in the dorms, and so we would go. You know, when it's meal time, we'd take times and go and get our meals in the dorm in the cafeteria. And it did get a little bit testy on game day, you know, a couple hours before the game day, if you had to go to a class and then you had to try to work your way back through the crowd to get to the top spot.
Yeah, where are you going?
It got a little testy there.
Yeah, I bet. Hey, final thing on this, Dave, and this really, John's right. I mean, this is sort of a capper to the week and bringing us into what Gil has meant, and it's a great place in our community. This is wonderful stuff. Thank you for taking the time to call. But I've had somebody tell me, and I don't know if you ever witnessed this or experienced it, but somebody told me that the great man himself, the old man himself, the great Ralph Miller, would occasionally, and on one occasion certainly, because my friend experienced it, and I don't think it was just making it up, Ralph came out after a late night of studying film or whatever and saw some of the students on the ramps and kind of sat down among you and said, now you guys wouldn't be foolish enough to be out here without having a little something to fortify you against the night, would you?
I won't officially confirm that, but I will say that Ralph did come out and questioned our intelligence about being there at the time that we were there. And we might have needed a little bit of lubrication to make it feel better. And I won't say that Ralph joined in on it with us.
Okay.
There may be some truth to that story.
That's a great way to cap
it. And the one thing I love about this, all of this, is that you did all that chicanery and you had a tremendous career and now you're retired and it all worked out really well.
Well, and the best part about that, John, is all that chicanery and everything, that's what brought me back to retire in Corvallis. Mm, that's nice. What makes Corvallis the best college campus around. And I read a thing the other day that Corvallis has more graduates that come back and live here, a higher percentage of graduates come back and live here than many other college towns. And it's the reason being is the chicanery that you can have and the freedom to have that and the bond that you feel when you come here.
Yeah.
And that's what brought me back to retire here from California was there's this my wife asked me, where do you want to retire? And I thought the best time my entire life and the most enjoyable place was Corvallis. And so that's where we came back. And it's been a great thing. The fact of coming here was the greatest thing I've ever done. And it's turned into a great retirement as well.
Great story.
Dave, thank you so much. I'll see you this summer again, I hope, back at the ballpark. Thank you for making time and making such a great call, Dave.
See you there, and you guys have a great day.
Thanks a lot. That was really cool. Yeah. Now, here's another longtime citizen of Beaver Nation, loves the Beavers, Doug in Salem. Doug, I don't know if you have a favorite memory of Gill Coliseum or what it is you're calling about, but welcome to the Joe Beaver Show.
Well, thank you. I hope you be kind enough to let me talk a little bit about the disasters going on 40 miles south. I have a close relative that's been a season ticket holder for the Ducks since 1980s or 1990s. And he's just livid because he can't get tickets to the Rose Bowl game. And so it appears that most of the season ticket holders can't get tickets to the Rose Bowl game. And it's just a disaster for them, for the school and everything.
Why can't they?
They had one of these computerized ticket deals, and they had a very short window. So they had when you log on a computer, of course, and you there's a regular list of you're on a waiting list. Sometimes it was like 200 or 300 people are trying to get on the computer. And then when some people got on there, they could buy unlimited number of tickets. So they could, if somebody had a single ticket, for a season ticket, they could, get 30 tickets, and they did. So all the tickets went to the very few people that could get onto the computer real early for a window. So it's just all the tickets are gone, and most of the season ticket holders can't get to the game.
Wow.
It's just become a disaster for the PR, just for the season ticket holders, for the school and everything. So I should be happy for that, but I'm really sad for my close relative who's been a season ticket holder for decades, and now he can't go to the game.
No, I'm not. I mean, I'm sorry to hear that for the people for whom they're deeply invested and care deeply. It's not a ha-ha-ha on you. No, I don't.
Right.
Doug, this is a totally different dynamic and thing you bring up, and I agree with you. I feel bad for those fans and that experience
but Mike, they're having.
I don't get it.
And Mike and Doug, don't we usually hear about those problems? It seems like it's popped up for teams that we've heard, like Wisconsin fans that one year and all were swindled into buying fake tickets.
Yeah, and there weren't enough to accommodate them, and you had like 10,000 people outside the Rose Bowl
and
gates.
I remember hearing stories similar to this when the Ducks went to the Rose Bowl in 95. So almost seems like it's a perpetuating problem with the Rose Bowl.
Doug, I don't. Yeah. I believe you. I believe you. And that is a disaster. It's a debacle, and it's not going to make people happy. That's for sure. Anything else on your mind today?
No, I'm glad we're able to keep a lot of our football players.
Yes.
Having a conference settled. Has been a big plus.
I agree. Hey, good to talk to you, Doug. Thanks for the story. Let's take a break.
Right now,
Johnny.
One, two, three, four. Only four players still on 247sports.com that have left, and it's the four original from early
no
in the
more
week.
That you've seen. So.
Nothing
you know,
more.
And
that's
Trent,
pretty good.
Trent, it is, and Trent himself does say, as a realist, and we got it, Kyle said, you don't win every battle. I mean, there may be further attrition and the departures and that could and probably will at some point happen.
Yeah.
And Trent himself has said, you don't even know exactly what the composition of your roster is going to be till after spring ball.
Yeah,
when,
true.
Even after spring ball, the portal opens again and people, maybe spring ball went and looked for an extra.
But if it remains a trickle, already there are some floods going on.
Right.
Teams that we play and
true.
We know, like Washington State, others. 20.
No, it's better.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to, say, oh, well, hey, only four. No, it's good that there's only four compared to.
But it will. There will be
we'll
more.
See. Any thoughts here down the stretch, Beaver Nation? The calls and texts have been tremendous. We'll try to get to some of them as we head down the stretch of what's been an enjoyable week for us. I know that. I hope it's been for you, too, on the Joe Beaver Show. Okay, let's get to some texts on the Joe Beaver Show down the stretch. I tried Rick Cooten, couldn't get a hold of Rick. And if you know Rick and want to have him call in, reach out to Rick, and we'll close with Rick, one of the more memorable moments in the history of the building. But anyway, what do you got?
Mike in Salem writes in and says, I slept on Gil Ramp for every UCLA game, 76 to 79. Loved Lonnie's dunk at the end of our win over UCLA. I wrote the text about no reason to respect Wooden. I can't even capitalize his name. I have seen, I say, hundreds of games thereabouts, and Gil always loved the place. Also, this year's team is as good and deeper than any team we've had, at least since GP1. We're going to win 25 games.
Oh, my God.
Go Beavs, Mike and Salem.
Well, Mike, that
I hope
means
you're right.
That, well, you know, that means a win tomorrow. And if there is a win tomorrow, then what you say about that number, tomorrow's game is really big as far as I'm concerned, because you've got an unbeaten team that's picked to win the Big West and is really good. And they've won 47 games combined over the last 2 years, won the Big West regular season title for the last 5 years. I mean, this is a good team and program. And if the Beavs win that tomorrow to get to 7-2, I feel pretty darn good about in terms of validating the start that we've enjoyed and have been impressed with. I think tomorrow's game is big in that respect. Let's get to Jay on the Downward Dog phone line and then more texts as we head down the stretch. Jay, good afternoon.
Hi. I listen to your Joe Beaver show every day, and my wife is kind of chagrined at that because at noon she wants to do other things. But anyway,
thank you, Jay.
She was listening, and when she was in the sixth grade at Roosevelt Grade School in Corvallis, she grew up in Corvallis, her teacher was a brand new student who just graduated from Oregon State, and he was a fraternity brother of Dave Gamby. And she said that Dave Gamby used to come over there like 2-3 times a week and play with him.
That's cool.
Wow.
That's really cool. Yeah.
Not surprising.
He'd come over and they'd play together, and he was like a giant with sixth graders, and he was in there, and he'd get right down and play with a kid.
Nice.
Well, they were enthralled with him.
Yeah.
That's a great story. And just hearing from him the other day, you can absolutely believe and understand that.
That's really a good story. Well, I'm glad, Jay, that you listen. We appreciate that, and I'm glad your wife had something to share, too. This has been a fun week for us to get to hear stories like that, and really appreciate you calling. Anything else on your mind, Jay? What is she saying?
The other thing about Gil Coliseum, too, was when I was there in school in the late 50s and early 60s, and she was in grade school, they used to go to Horner Museum, which was in the bottom of Gil Coliseum all the time. Mm-hmm. And all the kids in Corvallis would have field trips to the Horner Museum down there.
What kind of stuff did they have? Maybe we should talk to your better half, Jay, and find out what she remembers about it, if she's willing to share. Because I've heard about this Horner Museum, but by the time I got here in 99, it was no more. What kind of things were in that museum? Feel free to put her on if she's willing to.
The moose was down here. Just a second.
Okay. Yeah.
The moose was down there is now in the museum downtown.
Okay. And what's your name, ma'am?
Bobby.
Bobby. So, Bobby, thank you for tolerating us when Jay is listening, but we do appreciate it. So, tell us a little bit about what you remember, not only the moose, but just going into Horner Museum, what that was like as a kid.
Well, there was a stagecoach that first went in. There was a big rock display, and I think they even had the uranium in there, we found out later.
Wow.
And there was all kinds of, mostly Pioneer. It was called the Horner's Pioneer Museum. But anybody who grew up in Corvallis in the 50s and early 60s, their grade school classes always made field trips to Horner Museum.
Nice. I like it. And it sounds as though Dave Gamby made quite an impression on the kids, huh?
Yeah, he was like a big giant. He was lots of fun. And we didn't have to do any work when he was there. We all played.
Good for him and you. That's good stuff, Bobby. Thank you so much for calling and taking time for us.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. We will take do we need one more?
Yeah, we do.
Let's take it now and then close the show Boy, that makes me feel better. That's almost like Bob and Dorothy Butler and Dorothy driving Bob around to find the best place to hear the signal.
Yeah.
You know, during the Joe Beaver noon to two days, Dorothy would take the late, great Bob Butler, who would be one of those, and probably the Butler family still is, I'm sure, very much involved. I don't know figures and all of that in terms of the Nil world and tremendous generosity to Oregon
Bob,
State.
No, but Bob was the man.
Bob was a great one in that respect, and yet Dorothy would drive him around to get to the best site in the Eugene Springfield area to be able to hear the show.
He told us that. I just thought that was the
funniest
thing.
That is so sweet. Let's wrap it up next on the Joe Beaver Show. I understand, Ben.
Yeah.
Okay, what do you got? Down the stretch we
can
come.
Can you give us an update on TJ's move? No, I haven't talked to TJ since he left.
I talked to TJ a couple of days ago, and he nothing officially to report. I called him about something. I can't remember what. What was
baseball,
I calling him
something
about?
Baseball?
Scataboo.
Scataboo, yeah.
Maybe. No, it was something.
He sent us a picture of the he was at the Big 12 championship game in Dallas because he and his buddy were down there for the winter meetings for baseball in Dallas.
But no, we don't. But as soon as we know kind of what where he lands in terms of a full-time or even part-time gig in the Seattle market, we will let you know.
Orange One writes in and sends an athletic article. Well, I don't have time to read that.
Well,
right
okay,
now.
But do you even know what the upshot or what the subject is?
Well, his... Yeah. Text says this is a crazy story, but I don't have time to read it. It's behind a paywall as well.
Okay, Dave.
And that is, it's in The Athletic.
Okay, well.
And I, something about sports memorabilia? I have no idea.
Okay.
No idea.
You know, I know Romy's starting to go in with segments and features on baseball cards or cards, which I find interesting.
Yeah, he's doing a lot of different weird stuff.
I know, I concur.
What was his big announcement today?
Did he make a big announcement today?
Was it today? He was teasing some big announcement.
I don't know.
Everett Hartman, I was there the night that Harder tripped Rick Cooten. 14 seconds left, Beaver's Charlie Neal shooting a free throw when it happened. I remember Ralph Miller grabbing the PA and saying, I saw it, you all saw it, but don't throw things on the court.
Yeah.
So let me redo that. I saw it. You saw it, but don't throw things on the court. Okay, I can picture that now. The crowd wanted Harder's head on a platter.
Oh, I'm sure they did, and I'm surprised. Somehow, I think just the mystery of who did it.
Yeah, because
all you saw was Cooten go, did he fall? No, somebody tripped him. Somebody
right,
knocked
and
him
then,
down,
of course, in a bench situation, you might have a couple of assistants near you. And so it's like, who did it? Who put the foot
the
out?
The leg juts out.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious.
Bob Keith writes in and says, can relate to everything Jim Wilson talked about back in the day. You could always find an open door to Gil. After graduating, Johnny Eggers would also see to it that I had a way into games. John and Gene Eggers were the best. Best games, LSU, UCLA, George Tucker free throw, Ricky Lee's bank shot, losing to Cal in overtime, and Mike Keck hitting shots from the corner.
Yeah.
That's from Bob Keith.
That 101-100 game Bob Keith refers to, that Doug Oxon referred to, that others have talked about, that gets a little lost sometimes in the history that because the Beaver history got so much, in a sense, better in terms of being number one in the country, winning Pac-10 championships, that, you know, maybe a game like the 101-100 game, I'm glad has been reprised here this week by Bob and Doug and others.
Here's another one. Great interview with Big Jim. I remember all those great events and experiences at Gil. Jim brought up Harder definitely tripped the male cheerleader. My seat was directly across from the team benches, and I saw it happen. what did you think, though?
Yeah,
that's the question.
I mean, and they had to exit under the bleachers and out the hall and down into the bowels of Gil rather than the usual method of exiting to avoid further riot, perhaps potentially riotous behavior.
CVB says, if memory serves, and he parenthetically says a real question, didn't OSU call a timeout to arrange for the Duck players' safe exit from the floor after the tripping incident?
I think it's possible, yes.
And
I think that may
Doug
be,
told us about going behind the bleachers or whatever it was. Here's one from way back, early part of the show. Well, I'll go above it because there's two. Hey guys, thanks for the Kyle.heck... laugh out loud joking. That's funny. I think student athletes getting paid should sign a contract, 2 or 3 year. You breach the contract, you lose the money and perhaps pay a penalty. Also, I agree with that, by the way. Also, no more scholarships for those being paid. Absolutely. It should go to some other student athlete. I joked with Nick Daschle that guys like Shedeur Sanders should be buying his own meals in season two.
Mm-hmm.
Laugh out loud, $4+ million. I agree. And I asked that question at the very beginning of Neil. It's like, they're getting money. Do they still get a scholarship? Anyway, a lot of the times I've heard that they'll volunteer it back to the program.
Right, right.
And say, especially in baseball where you only get 11.7. By the way, he says, if Bray keeps out a list of players that transfer out to 5 to 10, that to me is amazing.
I agree.
There are many programs out there, P5 and P4, that are losing 20-plus players already.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. There's a lot out there. Dan writes in to say, let's go back to his first one. Memories of Gil. I remember Lonnie Shelton dunking the ball over Richard Washington of UCLA. Mm-hmm. Lonnie got a technical foul for that, but we had the game
well
in
worth
hand.
It. Yeah.
Gil went crazy. Also, playing basketball at Gil on Saturdays before Dixon Rec Center was built, we knew where the fuse panel, the breaker box was, and if the lights were off, we would just go turn them on. In Gil Rat Ball, if we couldn't get in there for some reason, we may go to a McAlexander Fieldhouse. This was when we were in junior high and high school growing up in Corvallis. Mm-hmm. He said, oh, yeah, I'm playing hoops with Big Jim's brother Bobby. So the thing about that statement right there could not be more true. And I think there was a group of us in the 70s, 11 and 12-year-olds, or the land, who just had to find a place to play, certainly in this state because it's so rainy. And my buddies and I would do the same thing up in Portland. And what we would do is get on a TriMet after foraging for cans and bottles to get on TriMet from Lake Grove to go into downtown Portland because on Barber Boulevard, right near that YMCA that was painted green, I don't know if it's still a YMCA, was across the street, was an old brick building. It was called the Neighborhood House. It was a Jewish community center.
The Jewish Middleman community
center. Yeah. And so someone tipped someone off, and the word spread like wildfire, that there was a window that had a fencing, cyclone fencing over the window, but it was broken and you could get in. And we would literally go, and I remember going several times, and there were already kids in there playing basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd go and play to our heart's delight, sneak out of there, and bus home.
Beautiful.
Because we were always looking for a warm, dry place. Because back then, Boys and Girls Clubs weren't prevalent. YMCAs, I don't know why we didn't play in the YMCA. We were just looking for a warm, dry place to play basketball.
What about under the bridge basketball? Did you find any places like that?
Yeah, there was a few in the area, but not very many.
But it's still cold and kind of miserable.
It's still cold,
yeah. We used to do, when I was going to school, where I went to school down, there was a, under the bridges around I-105, there was courts, Jefferson, I can't remember the street exactly, the names, but we would often convene there at all hours and play hoop under the bridges.
Okay, I have to read this one.
Yes.
Because this one stands out.
Okay.
And it stands out for obvious reasons when I read it, but it's also the only one of its kind in all the texts and all the memories we've gotten. And I've been waiting for something a little different than sports or concerts.
Okay, good.
My favorite memory of Gil was watching my beautiful wife graduate in 1997 during commencement. The place was packed. I was in the nosebleeds with our rambunctious 18-month-old son on my lap, and it was so hot. Boy, it gets hot up there.
Mm-hmm.
Rivaled only by watching our daughter graduate 2 years ago in Reser. Hmm. Much cooler. Love your show. Go Beavs. Thanks, George.
Thank you, George.
That's awesome.
There was also in the Oregon Stater, there was also mention, and I was there, and I enjoyed it. There was in 2000, there was a community Easter service in Gil, and my wife and I attended
I think we
it
went
in
to
Gil.
That.
I remember where I sat, and there were about 10,000 people there for that.
Yeah.
That was also a cool experience in terms of the community and many different churches in the area coming together to celebrate Easter.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember going to that.
What else you got?
There's some new ones since I've been reading these. And now this thing is kind of stuck.
The Oregon Stater, those of you that get that alumni magazine, has a really good article that Kip Carlson wrote, and there's some other good stuff in there, too, about Gill and its place in our community through the years?
Okay, it's stuck. For some reason, I click on the text, and then it's like, you know, the hourglass thing. It's stuck. But I can read a full sentence before opening it. And the only thing I can tell you is one of them says thanks. The other one says Carrie resets the trip here. So that's from the orange one. So I can't read that. Okay. And then one that I still can't read, too. It says, John, Kip Carlson wrote a nice piece on Gill history. Yeah, we talked about it with Kip. But he says in this first sentence, mention the crow's nest up high. Mm-hmm. And then it stops there, and I have to open it to read it. But I think we asked Kip about the crow's nest on the air.
And he wasn't sure.
He
wasn't sure how much use it had, what it was used for.
In fact, everyone we've asked who are older
To have a I remember watching Bob Blackburn carry his gear up there. I mean, I've heard nothing along those lines, but I do think in the original Doug McLeod, the Oregonian guy.
Oh,
Don. I think Don.
I can't remember.
Don said in describing the place that there were partitioned booths up in the top of that on the north side of Gill Coliseum. And that maybe broadcasts were originally done from up there, but I don't think lasted a real long time. They were either brought to the mid-level area or to courtside eventually. But if any of you have a specific recollection, radio may have exited, but it was used for cameras, for team photographers, videographers, shooting games, maybe. We got a couple of calls to help us bring the week to a close. Let's go to Mike. And then we'll get Paul, and we'll call it a week. And it's really been a memorable, enjoyable week here on the show. Thanks to all of your contributions. Mike, good afternoon.
Hey, guys. I've got one for you, Mike. A picture of Gary Payton Sr. shooting a free throw. We're 3 points up on UCLA. And I was an athlete back then. I was leaning against the basketball station, taking a picture. I got a great picture of him shooting a free throw. We're up by three, and I've got it. I've got it tucked away, and I'll find it, and I'll get it to you guys down the road. But it's a memorable time, and when I was there, I'm the one member. I had the all key for Reeser, and where baseball office was down right below, and me and Terry Stevenson would go and lock the door and get in 5 minutes before the rest of the students have been waiting in line for two or three days and get the best seat in the house during that era.
Good for you, Mike. Yeah, I bet all the students appreciated that. But I'm glad you had your ways, and you got to whatever you can do to get in those days, you did what you needed to do. Good to talk to you, Mike. Thank you for that recollection. Let's get to Paul as we head down the stretch of the week on the Joe Beaver Show. Hey, Paul.
Well, Mike, I don't have any recollections of Gill and any special moments there because I've probably only been going there for like 20 years, not like 40 years like everybody else. So, but yeah, it is an iconic venue, you know, that every announcer that comes there mentions it, you know.
Yes.
They just love this place because it's like old school. Mm-hmm. It is what it amounts to.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, Paul, announcers from the East. Whenever there's a new announcer that comes from the East Coast, if it's a big ESPN-type game, that's when they really wax poetic because I think it mirrors some of the older venues over on the East Coast.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, and I think they're kind of amazed that, wow, clear out here in rural Oregon, there's a venue just like the East Coast. It kind of amazes them, I think.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Anything else, Paul?
No, that'll do it, Mike. Oh, I just kind of laughed because the poor Oregon Ducks fans can't get their tickets. But, that's an NCAA thing. They screwed up big time. They should have put a limit on how many tickets people could take.
Paul, good talking to you. Thank you.
Let me rip off some of these last ones. The computer is working now.
Okay.
John, Kip Carlson wrote a nice piece. Go, da, 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 da. This writer, Gene, said he went to, he watched NCAA tournament games in Gill in the late 50s, 59, he's not sure.
Mm.
Also watched Far West Classic in Gill.
Yes.
Was there a Far West Classic?
Yeah, the Far West Classic originally began.
And
in Corvallis, and I think maybe even Eugene one year before they moved it permanently to Portland.
And as a 14-year-old in 1961, I participated in the State Elks free throw contest at Gill. What a thrill, Gene. And
thank you, Gene.
Okay, yeah. So that's that.
That's cool.
Thank you so much. Someone writes in, this is Judy from Eugene. Thanks for the sharing so many great memories of Gill for 75 years. Those of us Beaver Nation are so very blessed to hear them and add to our own wonderful memories of Gill and the campus. Definitely the best campus in all of the U.S. Can't argue with that at all. And along the lines of losing players, anyone seen the numbers of how many are leaving Michigan State? Yeah, it's high. I don't know, but it is high. Yeah.
Okay.
And so that's
man, they don't. They can't talk about a coaching change leading to it.
Right. And anyway. That's it.
Okay. Johnny, thank you. Now, tomorrow, let's make some more memories in Gill. It is interesting, is it not? I don't even know. I tried to touch on it yesterday, the phenomenon of Paul saying just now, I've only been going to Gill about 20 years, so I don't really have many memories.
Okay.
Yes.
I have to say this.
Yes.
Dean from Eugene's son wrote a really long text. I saw it earlier. I'm just now seeing it. He says, don't forget my text. It's really long. We don't have time.
Okay, Dean.
Monday.
Let's hit it Monday. Sarah Elcano Tuesday, but tomorrow 1:30. Sometimes it takes longer. You know, the memories of a cheerleader being tripped or a dangling duck or whatever else, they build up in our minds and we're able to talk more about them than even the things we've seen more recently. Have a great weekend. See you tomorrow at Gill.